America coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting the U.S. expresses confidence in the U.N.'s ability to monitor Iranian nuclear site inspections. The U.S. has expressed confidence in the ability of the U.N. Atomic Watchdog Agency to probe Iran's alleged past efforts to build a nuclear bomb following the reported leak of a document that indicates Tehran will be allowed to carry out its own inspections under an international deal reached last month. The Associated Press said Wednesday it has seen what it calls a secret agreement between Iran and the International Atomic Energy Agency, and endorsed by the six world powers that negotiated the deal. John Kirby is a U.S. spokesman.
When it comes to monitoring Iran's behavior going forward, the IAEA has separately developed the most robust inspection regime ever peacefully negotiated to ensure Iran's current program remains exclusively peaceful. The overarching objective, as you know, of the JCPOA.
Kirby said the U.S. is comfortable with any arrangements the IAEA has with Iran. He said if the IAEA is not happy, sanctions against Iran would not be lifted. The U.S. Congress is set to vote next month on whether to back or reject the nuclear deal. The United States is proposing that the U.N. Security Council impose an arms embargo on South Sudan after President Salva Kiir declined Monday to sign a peace deal in Ethiopia, ending the 20-month conflict. U.N. diplomats said they expect to vote soon. President Kiir has told U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry that he will sign the agreement after further consultations with stakeholders. Rebel leader Riek Machar signed on Monday. Meanwhile, a South Sudanese military spokesman said fighting broke out Wednesday in the oil-producing Upper Nile state close to the Sudanese border. He said fighting also has broken out in eastern Equatoria state between Juba, the capital, and the town of Numil on the border with Uganda. This is VOA News. The UN humanitarian chief calls the scale of suffering in Yemen incomprehensible, warning unless the fighting ends, there will be nothing left to fight for. Stephen O'Brien briefed the Security Council Wednesday on his just-completed trip to Yemen, saying he's shocked by what he saw.
The civilian population is bearing the brunt of the conflict. A shocking 4 out of 5 Yemenis require humanitarian assistance, and nearly 1.5 million people are internally displaced. More than 1,000 children have been killed or injured, and the number of young people recruited or used as fighters is increasing.
O'Brien condemned what he called the disregard for human life by all parties. Israel's Supreme Court is suspending the detention of a Palestinian hunger striker with alleged links to jihadists who has suffered brain damage after 65 days without food. The court announced late Wednesday that Mohammed Alan would remain hospitalized, but his shackles would be removed. His family can visit him. It says he can petition for his release if his condition improves. The release of Oscar Pistorius from a South African prison has been put on hold by the country's Justice Department. The Paralympian was expected to be released Friday, less than a year into his 5-year sentence for the killing of his girlfriend Reva Steenkamp. A department spokesman said a June decision to release Pistorius would be postponed, pending a later review by the parole board. Criminal lawyer Manny Witz does not believe the action will affect Pistorius' eligibility for parole.
Once everything's been done, and if he's a suitable candidate and he complies, and if they can impose the conditions, then it won't affect him at all. What you need to know, and what's very, very important, is that if you don't comply, even when you're released, they can take you back.
Pistorius was convicted last September of culpable homicide for shooting Steenkamp at his home the previous February. He insists it was an accident. Officials of the European Stability Mechanism Wednesday formally approved the release of billions to help rebuild Greece's battered economy and pay down its debt. Earlier, German lawmakers voted to approve a $95 billion bailout package. Russia sentenced an Estonian security officer to 15 years in prison Wednesday for spying. Eston Kover was found guilty of arms smuggling and violating border regulations. U.S. spokesman John Kirby denounced the sentence.
Kovar was seized in Estonia near the Russian border on September 5th of last year. His abduction, detention, and now conviction on baseless charges demonstrates a flagrant disregard by the Russian authorities for the rule of law.
Russian media say Kovar will be sent to a high-security prison and fined about $1,500. Malian separatists have called on U.N. peacekeepers to remove a security zone in the country's restive north, aimed at quelling further deadly clashes. The zone was put up around the town of Kidal to protect civilians following 3 days of clashes between Tuareg separatists and a pro-government militia called the Platform Coalition. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voices of America. I'm James Barte, Washington. Today is Thursday, August 20th. And here are some of the stories we are covering. South Sudan's government responds to a statement by the chair of the African Union Commission for failure to sign a peace deal.
The statement of Her Excellency is very unfortunate because she was a party to the decision that we made. And the government of South Sudan initial the agreement with reservations and concerns.
Michael Makui, South Sudan's information minister, analysts say they are not surprised that South Sudan's warring parties missed the deadline to sign a peace deal. Intervention in Libya's conflict is risky but urgent, say analysts, and the UN says it uncovers new allegations of rapes by peacekeepers in Central African Republic.
These new allegations concern a report that three young females were raped by three members of a MINUSCA military contingent. The allegations were reported to the mission's Human Rights Division on the 12th of August by the families of the three women.
As UN spokesperson Vanina Mistrachi, Malawians are worried over expected food shortages. U.S. officials say trade with Africa is more promising than ever, and a former Zimbabwe finance minister fights to end the death penalty. Those stories plus Marco Oman Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. South Sudan's government is expressing disappointment in a statement attributed to Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma, chairperson of the African Union Commission. She reportedly said Wednesday that South Sudan's warring parties will bring disaster on themselves and the region if no peace deal is signed to end the country's 20-month-old civil war. But Information Minister Michael Makui says Dlamini Zuma was party to the decision by President Salva Kiir not to sign the document because of concerns with the security arrangement aspects of the deal.
The statement of Her Excellency is very unfortunate because she was a party to the decision that we made. And the government of South Sudan initial the agreement with reservations and concerns. And that after the 15 days, the government would come back and negotiate all the outstanding issues before the signing of the agreement. This was done with her full knowledge. And as such, I'm surprised that she's talking as if she was not a party to all that took place in Addis.
But she said that the deal that was on the table, the one you did not sign, was a balanced document whose faithful and effective implementation by all the parties would enable them to find a lasting solution to the conflict.
We said this is not a final document, and she's one of the people who accepted that, yes, this is not a final document. Government of South Sudan, go and consult with your people and come back in the 15th day so that you come and resume negotiation with the rebels on the outstanding issues. How does she expect us to sign the final agreement?
Let me say I spoke to a rebel spokesman who said that your government did not sign the agreement because you are afraid of power sharing.
That is relevant. That is immaterial. Power sharing is not an issue. Our plan is with the security. Because after all, if the question of power sharing, government has a majority, whether in Upper Great Upper Nile or in the states or at the national level. Why should we fear power sharing? Our problem is the security arrangements, which is connected with the integrity and the sovereignty of the government of South Sudan and the people of South Sudan. This is our concern.
Why is security a concern to you? You don't want to form a united army?
It is a concern because it is unacceptable, and it has never happened anywhere whereby the sovereignty of a state, the security of a state, the security of the government, and the head of an elected president, and all these are handed over to a foreign element.
But Riek Machar and his supporters are not foreign elements.
What is Riek Machar after all? Riek Machar is just a rebel who is not elected. He was appointed by President Trump in order to be his vice president. Riek Machar has no right to dismantle an existing system and hand over the integrity and the sovereignty of the state.
But your government negotiated. Why did you not say that?
We said that to the mediators, and the mediators are adamant. They are not listening to us. They are not even introducing the issues that we agreed on with the rebels.
Michael Makui is South Sudan's information minister. He was speaking with me from the capital, Juba. Hopes for peace in South Sudan remained dimmed after President Salva Kiir walked away from a deal on Monday, saying he wanted 15 days to consult with the people of South Sudan. VOA's Steve Baragona looks at what went wrong.
South Sudan's peace process has suffered through chaotic negotiations and multiple broken ceasefires. Chatham House researcher Ahmed Soliman says when a Monday deadline passed with no deal...
It wasn't very surprising, given the pattern of developments over the last 20 months.
Soliman says one major sticking point is power sharing that would give each party a certain percentage of seats in the state parliaments. The plan also calls for demilitarizing Juba, the capital. Government supporters see that as a major infringement on their sovereignty, says analyst Niall Titmame at the Juba-based Sud Institute.
It means the foreign forces will likely be the one to protect Juba. So for them, they don't want to see this.
Titmame says these are going to be tough conditions for President Salva Kiir to sell to his constituents. And if history is any guide, Mr. Kiir is not likely to be more accommodating when he returns from the consultations.
Whenever the parties are about to narrow the gap, they would be sent back for consultation. When they got back for consultation, the politicians would be hard and more.
Although President Kiir did not sign the agreement, his former deputy, rebel leader Riek Machar, did. There have been splits among Machar's SPLM-IO forces, though, so if he calls for peace, it's not clear whether all the rebels will listen. Titmame says IGAD, the East African bloc leading the negotiations, made a mistake in setting a deadline for an agreement. He says the parties should have been given more face-to-face time to work out an agreement themselves. Chatham House's Soliman says he agrees to a point.
But then we've had a lot of time, and there, you know, really isn't, I think, any excuses anymore.
Both agree failure to strike a deal damages IGAD's credibility as a regional authority. But they say with tens of thousands dead, millions displaced, and hunger growing, the ultimate victims are the people of South Sudan. Steve Baragona, VOA News, Nairobi.
The United Nations said Wednesday that it has received new allegations that peacekeepers in the Central African Republic have been accused of raping three young women. As viewers Margaret Bashir reports from the United Nations, the troubled UN mission has a growing list of sexual abuse allegations against its personnel.
Last week, an angry Secretary General Ban Ki-moon fired the head of the mission, known as MINUSCA, over earlier rape allegations, which he said have tarnished the credibility of the United Nations. Wednesday, UN spokesperson Vanina Mastrachi said headquarters had received new, disturbing allegations of misconduct that happened in recent weeks in the central town of Bambari.
These new allegations concern a report that three young females were raped by three members of a MINUSCA military contingent. The allegations were reported to the mission's Human Rights Division on the 12th of August by the families of the three women.
Mastrachi said one of the women was a minor. The UN Children's Fund, UNICEF, is assisting in providing medical and psychosocial support to the alleged victims. Mastrachi told reporters only one contingent was involved. The UN does not name the countries of origin of accused peacekeepers, but a map of the mission's deployment shows forces from the Democratic Republic of Congo were the only contingent deployed in Bambari. The peacekeepers' government has been notified and given 10 days to tell the United Nations whether it plans to investigate. If it declines or fails to reply, the UN will conduct its own investigation. The UN has no authority over the prosecution of troops deployed in its missions. It can only repatriate the accused with the expectation that their home country will prosecute them. Since its establishment in 2014, 13 sexual abuse allegations have been made against peacekeepers in the Central African Republic mission. Margaret Bashir, VOA News, the United Nations.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Batte in Washington. Today is Thursday, August 20th, and please send your comments and opinions to DaybreakAfrica at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time, 14 and a half minutes past the hour, with the Arab League again calling for a new strategy to fight the Islamic State group in Libya. Analysts say the need for action has never been more urgent. Viewers Heather Murdoch reports from Cairo.
Libyan Foreign Minister Mohamed Al-Dairi has called on the Arab League for air support and weapons to fight the so-called Islamic State militants who are increasingly operating in Libya.
فإنما يثير الاندهاش هو الإزدواجية التي يتعامل بها المجتمع الدولي.
Egyptian Arab League representative Tarek Adel cites the US-led coalition in Syria and Iraq, saying inaction in Libya amounts to a double standard. The Arab League plans to meet August 27th to devise a way to help Libya militarily. Jan St-Pierre, the head of Berlin-based security firm Mossecon, says for such a force to protect the region, it needs to act now.
The Arab League needs to act on this, and they need to build some type of coalition that will actually get something done and bring about a certain level of stability in Libya, because that conflict is making them unstable and creating a lot of problems in various Arab League countries.
To be successful, a coalition needs to focus on containing the conflict, he says, and the countries involved would have to avoid competing for influence or profit. Some analysts say supporting one Libyan government could fuel the civil war between Libya's two competing parallel governments. Libyan officials say militant attacks have been terrorizing the country since 2012. Recently, ISIS reportedly crushed an uprising in Sirte, a coastal city now under militant control, by killing dozens of people and desecrating bodies. Heather Murdoch, VOA News, Cairo.
U.S. officials say trade with Africa is more promising than ever as they prepare for a major summit with the continent next week in Libreville, Gabon. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
U.S. officials say the African Growth and Opportunity Act is much more than a simple trade agreement. The act, which was recently renewed for 10 years by the U.S. Congress, provides 39 sub-Saharan African nations with liberal access to the U.S. market. It also allows the United States to export many of its intangible values, among them an open market system and an emphasis on development, democratization, and women's empowerment. That is according to Linda Thomas-Greenfield, the U.S. Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs.
We were delighted, I mean absolutely delighted, with the recent 10-year reauthorization of AGOA. The reauthorization garnered bipartisan support here in the United States, and that's a clear indication of promoting prosperity, opening markets, and inclusive development and stronger regional integration and good governance on the continent of Africa.
The 10-year extension, the longest in the program's history, also will provide more stability for all those involved, said Assistant U.S. Trade Representative Flory Leeser. She says that changes the dynamic for the trade forum.
Now that we are no longer worrying about AGOA expiring in the near term, the AGOA forum will provide an opportunity for us to begin a more strategic conversation about the future of our trade and investment relationship with Africa.
Thomas Greenfield said AGOA also has a political side, including a provision that allows a nation's status to be reviewed if it strays. That is being considered right now, she said, in the Central African nation of Burundi, which was plunged into turmoil over the president's run for and winning of a third term, which some critics say violates Burundi's constitution. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
A final agricultural production survey in Malawi forecasts that many people will face acute food shortages this year due to low yields of the country's main staple, maize or corn, largely because of recent flooding. Private traders are holding maize in anticipation of selling it at higher prices during the hunger period. But as Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre, the government is asking Malawians not to panic.
Malawi's Agriculture Minister Alan Chembegeza presented the report's findings in the capital, Lilongwe.
The results show that maize production has decreased from 3,978,123 metric tons that were realized in the 2013-2014 agriculture season to 2,898,123 metric tons in the current agriculture season. This represents 27.7%.
The new government statistics show that more than 200,000 Malawians are expected to face an acute food situation. Another report released at this year's Southern African Development Community Summit in Botswana put the number of Malawians at risk of hunger at over 1 million. Private traders have now started holding their maize stocks in anticipation of selling at higher prices during the peak of the hunger crisis. Freshari Goya is a maize trader in Chirimba Township in Blantyre. We can say the maize is scarce, he says, adding that they have the maize, but are hoarding it because of the hunger threats. They want to sell it later. Malita Musa, a single mother of Chobon Township, told VOA she has started keeping maize hassocks ready for the impending shortage. In the past, we used to sell the maize hassocks to the millers right at the maize mill, who were reselling them as animal feeds, she says. But now they are taking to home to keep because it will help them have food during the hunger situation. Anne Chilanga operates Elestra at the Blanda Free Market, which largely sells Nsima, a thick starchy porridge made from maize flour. She says the maize shortage will have a negative impact on her business. Reverend Felix Maulana is the chairperson for the National Food Reserve Agency. He told the privately owned Capital Radio last week the government is importing maize.
We are procuring maize now, about 50,000 metric tons, and so therefore, or leaf. But even after leaf, we have about 35 metric tons ready for anything.
He also said the National Grain Marketer, the Agriculture Development and Marketing Corporation, is also importing 30,000 metric tons from Zambia. But Rafiki Hajat of the think tank Institute for Policy Interaction told VOA that past experience shows that maize imports are not necessarily a means of averting a hunger situation.
We had a drought situation here in 1999 and in the year 2000, 42,000 people died, not because there was no maize, but because the price of maize was inflated by over 100% and they couldn't afford the maize.
Chairperson for the Parliamentary Committee on Agriculture, Felix Jumbe, told VOA the government should have first bought and depleted the maize stocks from local traders who are holding the maize before it started importing. Doing so, he said, would have helped prevent the impending price increases of maize. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blanta.
Former Zimbabwe Finance Minister Tendai Biti has joined a growing list of people calling for the total abolition of the death penalty in Zimbabwe. The country's new constitution abolished the mandatory death sentences and limited penalty to cases of murder committed in aggravating circumstances. It bars death sentences for women and men under age 21 or over 70 at the time of committing the crime. Biti, who is now a prominent lawyer, says current death row inmates should be pardoned.
There are about 120 people that are on death row. There are so many that the normal prison that is designed specifically to cater for death row prison, Harare Central Prison, can't cater. So there's been an overflow of death row prisoners, and about 20 of them are now located at Chikurubi Prison.
You are taking interest in these death row prisoners. What exactly do you want to be done?
Well, I'm a human rights activist, and I don't believe in capital punishment. So I've taken it upon myself with others the duty to try and save as many of them as possible using the law. So I've got three cases that are pending right now. One group is the one that says making people wait for so long on death row without executing them amounts to cruel and inhuman treatment, which is an infringement of Section 53 of the Zimbabwean Constitution. The second round of cases that I've brought is to say that the new constitution in Section 48 says there's a right to life. The new constitution then says a law may be passed that may provide for death penalty in aggravated circumstances. That law has not been passed. So I'm now saying that anyone to be executed now can be executed, but that law that is envisaged by the Constitution in Section 48.2 is not there. The third interesting case which I'm trying to do, and this one I'm really, really interested in, I'm representing this chap called Obadiah Makoni. He killed his girlfriend, whom he found in flagranto 20 years ago, and he was convicted of murder, but because of age, he was sentenced to life. So I'm trying to argue that a life sentence does not mean life. Life doesn't mean life. And that an irreducible sentence of life imprisonment with no prospect of release either on parole or on pardon is not constitutional.
That was prominent Harare lawyer and former finance minister Tendai Biti speaking from Harare with Blessing Zulu of VOA Zimbabwe service. 25 minutes past the hour time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Mark Ullman in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Thursday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with basketball. Egypt outplayed Gabon 96-48. Nigeria beat the Central African Republic 88-63. Cameroon prevailed over Mali 70-56. And host Tunisia subdued Uganda 77-55 at the Africa Men's Basketball Championships in Tunis on Wednesday. Today, Thursday, Senegal play Morocco as Mozambique challenge the defending champions Angola. Ivory Coast engage Cape Verde Islands and Algeria face Zimbabwe. In football, Egypt's Ismaili and Tunisia's Club Africains drew 2-2 as Morocco's Raja Casablanca and Libya's El Hilal Benghazi drew 0-0 on the final day at the inaugural Union of North Africa Football Association's Club Cup in Casablanca, Morocco on Wednesday. At the end of the round-robin contest, Raja Casablanca are champions having amassed 7 points. Ismaili and Club Africains have 4 points each. Ismaili is second on account of a better goal average, while El Hilal Benghazi has 1 point. Turning to athletics, the Confederation of African Athletics President Hamad Kalkaba Malboum is one of the 4 newly elected International Association of Athletics Federations IAAF vice presidents, the IAAF revealed in Beijing, China on Wednesday. Following the IAAF council elections, Britain's Sebastian Coe is the new IAAF president. From the 31st of August, he replaces Senegal's long-serving Lamine Diaw, who will serve as honorary president. Meanwhile, hosts Uganda beat Kenya 33-18 as Tanzania outclassed Rwanda 59-15 in netball at the East Africa Military Games in Kampala on Wednesday. Kenya beat Burundi 3-0 as Rwanda edged Tanzania 2-1 in football. Uganda pipped Kenya 32-31 as Tanzania edged Rwanda 27-25 in handball. Uganda prevailed over Kenya 65-54 as Tanzania dismissed Burundi 74-63 in basketball. Earlier on, Rwanda edged Uganda 54-52 in basketball. Uganda and Tanzania drew 1-1 as Rwanda and Kenya drew 0-0 in football. Uganda overpowered Rwanda 77-10 as Tanzania outclassed Burundi 95-6 in netball. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. Here's our listener mail for this Thursday morning, August 20th.
Good morning. This is William Kuklo from Monrovia, Liberia. I believe South Sudan's president's decisions not to sign the peace deal is a setback to the peace process in South Sudan. I believe the people of South Sudan need total peace and unity. Therefore, a solution to bring an end to the situations need to be adhered to. I call on the United Nations to put tough actions on the government of South Sudan immediately. Thank you and have a great day.
We thank you, listener, for your comment, and please send your viewpoints to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. The United States is proposing that the United Nations Security Council impose an arms embargo on South Sudan after President Salva Kiir refused to sign a peace deal to end a 20-month-old conflict. And that's it for this Thursday, August 20th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer David Vandy, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post editor Mark Ullman, along with our engineer Carl Sterling, I'm James Barty in Washington saying have a good day.
What's up? What's going on, Africa? This is Jackson Vungany in Washington.
And I'm Nadia Sami in Cape Town.
We run everything.
Yeah.
Radio.
Yeah.
Club.
Yeah.
This is Upfront,
the hottest program on the Voice of America.
The hottest under the sun.
Hold up.
Yes, we can change the world.
Change the world.
Hey, Africa. Listen to Upfront each Wednesday at 1730 UTC on The Voice of America for great music. Well, I personally like rock and roll. Led Zeppelin makes me go crazy.
You need cooling, baby, I'm not fooling.
It's hot, man. It's hot.